Welcome back to another episode of Free Basketball. I am your host, Ryan Meadows, and I am joined once again by one Daniel Greer. We are talking about the NBA Finals. We have just finished Game 2, a rousing, very interesting, a fun, near, may I say, exciting 107-88 Game 2. Daniel, is that your reaction that you had to Game 2? Was it one of the best NBA Finals games that you have ever seen?
Like, for sleeping? Like, snooze fest? Like, yes, yes. Yeah. Not interested at all.
Not interested at all. Even though, heading into half, it was 50-52, and I thought, all right, here we go. We're going to have a super fun second half. Nope. We had a third quarter blowout, and that was basically the game. The Warriors outscored the Boston Celtics 35-14, and that was basically the end of that game. So I don't know if you want to break down too much about that. I have some little tidbits I kind of want to discuss, but let's talk more about Game 1, because Game 1, I think we both agree, was much more interesting and exciting, even though it was a 12-point win for the Boston Celtics. They won Game 1, 120-108, behind a massive fourth quarter, outscoring the Warriors 40-16. I think 24 points outscored in a fourth or in a quarter in the finals was the most ever in history, which so far through the first two games, we've got a lot of history setting being done. But Game 1, did you actually find that as enjoyable as I did, just the flow of the game or the anticipation of the matchups? You know, this is supposed to be the two best teams remaining in basketball. Did you feel like the Game 1 was kind of accurate of what we might see in this series overall with the gameplay?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a more of what Game 1 was the rest of the way. You're going to have another blowout. And I even predicted that one team, each team would have a comeback win. Each team would have a blowout win. All right, so that's two wins each. And then there's going to be at least two other games where it's going to be a decent game where it comes down and it's just like, you know, it could go either way. So that's 4-7. And the first game was all right, but realistically, Boston came back. So that's their comeback win, and then now this is the Golden State's blowout win. So expect we're going to go back to Boston. Boston's going to win by 25, and then you're going to see Golden State come back and take a win. And then we'll be tied up coming back to Golden State 2-2.
So going ahead and tipping the hat, spoiler alert early, you've already given your prediction for at least the next couple games when it moves to Boston now. Yep. But the game in general, was the matchup what, you know, we had talked about matchups, who was defending who, the small ball lineups, up and down pace. Was this what you were hoping for out of an NBA Finals matchup?
Yeah, and they played, you know, fairly well up and down the court, and it just seems that, you know, a lot of times this game gets kind of stuck, you know, and just kind of just gets where it's lazy and just kind of it's rolling along. Everything's going great. And then it's just kind of lull after lull after lull. And so I'm hoping they can get away from all those lulls, whether it's Draymond yelling and acting like a crazy person, or if it's Steve Kerr calling for the code. You know, he's wanting to make sure he holds the code since he is the holder of the code book. He wants to make sure everything gets reviewed. So there's review after review after review. So besides that, the game has been pretty good. And the first half of Game 2 was very good. It was back and forth. They both were kind of throwing their punches. But realistically, it's really been just kind of one team just eventually turns it on and just it takes off. And so you saw the third quarter from the Warriors was just too much. Even though they came back in the third quarter of the first game, Boston Celtics figured out a way to come back because the lead wasn't as big. But I like the style of play so far. But there is a lot of turnovers, a lot of steals, which creates that up and down, but it also is a little sloppy too. So I think they can eventually hone in where it's not as many turnovers and steals.
Yeah, I think that will get fixed. At least I hope it gets fixed as we get deeper into the series. But so far, these first two games, you can really point to like a quarter from each of these games where the game was swung, right? Like fourth quarter, game one, third quarter of game two. And that's basically the story of the first two games. So I don't know if we're in store for big quarter swings like that the rest of the series. I mean, it's certainly possible. We've seen it already in games one and two. So seems likely, but I'm hoping more kind of even play, because that was kind of the story for the Celtics, right? It was the role players, everyone else. Right. Jason Tatum was bad. Jaylen Brown got on fire in the fourth quarter, and it was Al Horford going, what, 6 for 8 from three, going for 26, 28 points. Marcus Smart hitting some threes. And then the story of the game two for the Celtics was Tatum and Brown were going off and no one else was doing anything. So I don't know if that was strategic on their part, but the Warriors obviously picked up the pace. We all expected zigzag theory. I think everybody on this planet was on the Warriors in this game, if you were a betting player. We knew that they were going to be more locked in, more intense. I thought noticeably that their defense was much better. Even though Tatum was going out and going off early, a lot of those shots were contested and they were tough shots that he made. And Jaylen Brown, the same thing. He started out hot. He had like 8 points in the first, well, he scored eight of their first like 11 or 12 points for the game. And then kind of cooled off after that. So the defense picked up, and with Draymond guarding Jaylen, guarding Tatum, we can talk about Draymond's antics after this, because I do have a couple little things about Draymond that I want to talk about. But did you think the Warriors kind of figured something out defensively already for the Celtics going forward? Or do you think it was basically the Celtics kind of fringe players not really caring that much since they already took game one?
I don't think it was not caring. I just don't think they were, you know, shooting well at all. Like, if you look at the numbers, like, Derek White plays much better normally, and he was off shooting. Al Horford, my God, like, you're talking about a fall from grace, but that's what Al Horford does. Like, if he has a big game, he always comes back and really doesn't do anything. End up with 2 points. Marcus Smart, 2 points. Derek White end up having a few more points, right? But he still went 4 of 13 for only 12 points. So, if you look at those numbers, yeah, Horford only had 4 shots and Smart had 6. But then if you add in Derek White's 4 for 13, like, those guys just aren't scoring. And that's really what the Celtics have to have, because you're going to get, you know, close to 25 out of Tatum. You're going to get close to 20 out of Brown. But honestly, that's 45 points. Like, where is the rest of the offense coming from? And so I really hope that these other guys, these role players, can figure out a way to put the ball in the basket. And that's really what it comes down to. And if you see tonight, it wasn't that the Golden State Warriors were just that much better. I think they were tuned in a little bit more defensively, and that helps. But realistically, Steph Curry, 29 points. I don't know what he had in the first game, but it wasn't much more than that. It might have been the same. But Jordan Poole added in 17 points. He's been MIA, right? After game, either like two or game three of the Grizzlies, he had some okay games, not much home to write home about in the Mavericks series. And game one, he was MIA. Like, I think his face was on the side of a milk carton. He was so bad. And so finally, he had a decent game. Now, it was against a lot of backup people, and he threw in a lot of trash, like half court trash. But yeah, he still had a better game. And so I think that's what it comes down to. Their role players played better than the Celtics in game two.
Well, you think most of that is because Andre Iguodala did not play in game two? Is why the role players picked it up? Sorry, that's a softball question for you to tee that one up. That was intentional.
Yeah. Andre Iguodala, I did hear your name during the game. It sounds like you were helping give some advice in your street clothes. Probably that might have been an MVP quote he gave. An MVP quote where that's pretty much the most important thing he'll do the whole entire series is that one quote he had during a huddle.
Yeah, obviously turnovers are the biggest issues for the Celtics. I think the Warriors turned their turnovers into 33 points, I think. I don't remember that number, but I'm pretty sure it was like 33, 32, 34, something like that.
Which 33.
Which is another finals record. We're setting finals records all over the place in this series, and we're only two games in. Another series record, the lowest NBA finals plus minus since 1996, belongs to Jason Tatum. A minus 36 tonight. There are four other games that were close. 2020, Tyler Hero, game one versus the Lakers, minus 35. Kobe and Lamar Odom in game seven of the 08 finals versus Boston Celtics. Kobe was minus 35, Lamar Odom was minus 34. And then LeBron James in game three of the 2013 finals versus the Spurs, he was a minus 32. Special note about all of those. Nobody won the championship that year except LeBron. And if you remember from 2013, they were down 3-2 to the Spurs and needed a Ray Allen clutch, one of the most clutch threes in the history of the NBA Finals, to push it to a Game 7 to win that final. So this is some elite company right here, where the track record so far in minus 30-plus in an NBA Finals game, which we know, we always say take plus minus with a grain of salt, but historically, if it's not for one outlier, you know, Ray Allen, historic great three-point shot to push it to a Game 7, we're talking about teams that went 0-for-4 in the Finals. Wow. So, do you use that history to kind of judge this Celtics thing? Or do you think it's more like there's a chance for a once-in-a-generation miracle shot like Ray Allen, like LeBron James had in the 13 finals?
Wow. That's crazy. I never thought that'd be a stat, right? I never thought that'd be tracked.
People are quick on Twitter.
How in the world do you get to minus 36? Like, how is that possible? You get to minus 36. And let me just say, looking at the rest of the guys, like, there's nobody close to a minus 36. The next highest one is a minus 17 by Derek White. A minus 17. So he's literally 19 more minus minutes. Like, that is just mind-boggling. Like, Jaylen Brown is a minus 10. Like, how, I don't understand. I guess he was just on the court and they were figuring out, hey, U4 didn't work. Let me put in a new 4, right? And let's keep Tatum in the game. We're just going to switch out the other 4. And just, he was just in there the whole time just getting his brain kicked in the third quarter. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. But one, how is that possible that he gets a minus 36? But anyway, no, that doesn't scare me, because I know that, yes, stats are true and stats do hold up. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at the two teams on the court, and I still think the Celtics are better than the Warriors.
Mm. So Tatum has been emulating Kobe a lot, and tried to be just like his hero tonight with that minus 36, so bless up. let's talk about Draymond Green. Look, the antics tonight, everyone always complains about how long a leash he has. Everyone has made the observation, look, he gets that first technical early on purpose and then basically puts the referees at a decision to dare him to kick him out of a basketball game. My question to you is, why is it so difficult for referees to not just get rid of Draymond Green? Why is he so important to the NBA game?
I don't know. It's mind-boggling. Like, how bad it really just comes out. Like, nobody else in the NBA has the leash that Draymond has. Like, and he's up in the ref's face. It's not like he's yelling at him from across the way. He's literally in their face, like berating them. Like, he's loud. Like, his mouth, he might have the largest mouth I've ever seen in my life. But it's mouth always breathing. Moving. Yeah, it's always moving. And I don't get it. But he does have a long leash. And I think it's I think it's weird. And the more I've thought about it, I think I understand where Draymond Green is. And I'm going to ask you this question real quick before I want to, I guess, hit on my point. Do you think he's kind of maybe at – no, okay, I'm going to go back. Do you think he's actually, like, worse now as a player than he was, let's say, 5 years ago?
Absolutely.
A player, just a player.
100%.
Okay.
100%.
Do you think that he is more vocal now and more like kind of just crazy with it, the way he acts, more now than he was 5 years ago?
I would actually say they're probably pretty equal. Now, his verbal outburst and his like throwing his arms at the ref and stuff like that, that's probably more so. Because he does it after almost every single call. Now, there was a couple tonight where he fouled on purpose and he knew it and he didn't argue. But if it's in a gray area at all, I always remember him being like this. I don't remember him being anyone else. And I guess that's part of like his mantra. So he's a worse player, but I don't know if his outbursts have necessarily gone up as he's gotten worse.
Okay. Well, my theory is, as what I've kind of seen throughout sports, you know, with especially old man sports, what happens is as you get older and you're still playing these rec leagues and these church leagues, a lot of times as you age, you lose a step. You lose your shot a little bit more, and you're not as good of a player. So you have to resort to other things. And I really think that he knows that he doesn't have the shot anymore. He's not as good of a defensive player. So he's having to resort to go to other areas to try to figure out how to be effective. And I think it's literally trying to play mind games. And I think he's trying to flop more than he ever has. And I think he's doing that because he has to. Because without any of that...
Yeah.
He's just an average player, which he should be. He really is an average player. Put him on the Pistons for the last 10 years. He's definitely an average player. But just in general, now in his game and his career, I think he's just trying to figure out a way to be effective.
Yeah, his intensity level was much higher tonight, and I thought he was pretty good on defense. But he's just such a complete zero on offense that I think you could point to the comeback from the Celtics being directly correlated to Draymond being on the court with passing up wide open shots. And he just kind of has to, right? Like he's never, like, I think he took two tonight that were wide open, but he's just never, ever going to be that guy. And we've seen in the NBA now that those guys just are few and far between found in the NBA. And so it's kind of a minor miracle that he's still here doing this. And I think that speaks to the greatness of Steph Curry and the gravity of him on offense, and all the other guys around him, you know, with, even though Klay's struggling a little bit, he still gets a respect of defense. Jordan Poole, you know, being a guy off the bench. But yeah, there's not hardly any players in the NBA that just do specifically what Draymond does, right? And that's why, to me, it's, if the Warriors go on to win this series, I think he could retire this summer. Like, he just looks like, I know he lost a lot of weight and he, you know, proclaimed that, you know, he wasn't in shape or as fit as he needed to be. But to me, this is kind of like his swan song, because another thing that I want to talk about is after game one, when they lost and they had that huge fourth quarter meltdown, Draymond comes out with his own podcast and talking about game one, all this stuff, does that rub you the wrong way as a fan? Like, if you were a fan of Draymond, would you prefer that he would do that right after a game one where you basically choked a 1-0 lead? Would you look for something like that, or would that kind of make you upset that he was kind of like taking advantage of the moment? Oh, hey, this is what happened. This is why we did this. We're blah, blah, blah. What's your initial reaction to that?
So the same thing was kind of brought up after the, I think it was game one game two of the Grizzlies series, where he got the technical foul and literally had a podcast come out that night. Like, he recorded that night and it came out the next morning or that month, whatever. I thought that was weird as well. I think him podcasting during a important series is weird in general. Just being honest, as an NBA fan, not mad about it. You know, it's fine. Like, literally, it's the same thing as somebody going live on Instagram or going live on Twitter and on Twitter Space and just kind of, you know, just talking to fans, just talking through some things. It's the same thing. So I'm not, you know, it's fine to me. As a fan, if I was a fan of the Warriors, it would frustrate me for the simple fact that you're supposed to be a player and you're supposed to be dialed in to the game and everything. And I get that part of it. But usually when the game is over, you try to turn it off as much as you can because it's always going to be going on in your mind as the player. So I know some things kind of distract you, but also talking through some things might be an outlet to allow you to express yourself. And so thinking of it that way, I think it's fine. I think it's weird still, but I do think it's fine, especially in the NBA. We've never had what we have right now as fans. Imagine if Michael Jordan would just finish the flu game and then the next day he woke up feeling better and he dropped like a 30-minute podcast and you're just like dialed into it. Like, how awesome would that be?
Yeah.
After he does the shot beating the Cavs, the shoulder shrug, comes out with a podcast, that's so cool. But we didn't have that. But it is cool that we have that access. And so it is frustrating, but man, I love it. I don't listen to it. I've never heard an episode, but I do think it's really good access.
Yeah, I haven't listened to an episode either. I mean, Andre Iguodala did the same thing. They both recorded that same night after game one. It is odd, but I don't want to be like against it, but I do think it's weird. Because that kind of stuff points to me that the end is near, right? Mm. Like, you're trying to give a little window into, you know, a game into the finals or your playoff run. You're basically not sending out your resume, but you're trying out, basically, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure Draymond will eventually be on TNT, right? I don't know who he replaces, but if Chuck, you know, if Charles Barkley decides he wants to retire, which seems like he might want to do that soon, seems like Draymond's trying out to be his replacement. And that's why it's kind of, all these signs have kind of been evident to me for the past couple of years. Like, he's had little guest spots on TNT and stuff like that. He's guest host during the playoffs. And now he's doing this podcast thing where he seems like he's trying to pave the road for life outside of basketball for him. And to 100%. Me, he's at the end of that road. So I think it's weird. I'm not upset about it. I've never listened to an episode. I do think it's a little odd for 4 hours later to, after, you know, you lose game one, you're talking about it and telling everybody why we did this, what's wrong, and all that kind of stuff. But there will people like that. So use that to your advantage. His advantage is that he plays in the NBA, and he's been on multiple championship teams, and he's currently in the NBA Finals. So why would he not use that advantage and leverage for him? Because he does feel like he's planning out his next move soon.
Yeah, so on that, J.J. Redick, his last season, I don't know if you remember that exact same thing. He was starting to get into the podcasting world and he blew up, right? He did really well, especially in his first season of podcasting. And it then kind of took on a life of its own. He didn't have the same last year where he's going to the finals, but that's a perfect example that you see that the end is near. And I have to say, I don't like Draymond. I really don't like listening to him. His insight, it's fine. I don't think he gives just so much humor like the other guys on TNT. I don't know. There's just something about him I'm not a big fan of, and that's taken all bias away. So I'm hoping he doesn't become a active member on the TNT crew, because I love Chuck and I love Shaq, Kenny, and Ernie definitely. So I hope that doesn't happen. But that's a perfect example. I like that example because it could definitely be coming to an end, and it's like, hey, let's hurry up and figure this thing out.
Yeah, I've got to figure out my next plan because this might be ending sooner than I expected. But that's enough about Draymond. That's probably too much about Draymond. What do you've got for game 3 on Wednesday in Boston? Do you think Boston holds home court and goes up 2-1? Or is this a Warriors come through, beat them by 10+, and game 1 fourth quarter was just a fluke?
I wouldn't doubt if this is a blowout in Boston, and I've kind of alluded to that earlier.
For
the Celtics. Blowout. Ooh. For the Celtics.
Okay.
They're in game 3, and I think just continue what we talked about earlier. I think it's going to be a good game from Boston in game 4, and then I think they're going to be up by 12 or 14, maybe 15 points at some point in the game, and you're going to end up seeing Golden State come back and grab the dub. So it kind of flips on its head, kind of similar to what's been going on in this first two games. What's your thoughts?
I want to pick the Warriors because I do think that game 1, that fourth quarter, was kind of fluky, right? But obviously Boston's role players should play better at home. But I thought the Warriors did a lot of good things defensively tonight. And even if the Celtics didn't really care that much, I mean, forcing that many turnovers and getting that many points off it, and Warriors were active on the boards once again tonight, and this should have been over probably early, but it was only close probably because the Warriors missed like 15 layups, it felt like, and wide open threes. So there's just something about it where I can't turn away from the Warriors. And I think the Warriors come into here, game 3, and everybody's going to be excited from Boston. Hey, we took game 1, we didn't care about game 2, we'll stomp them in game 3. Usually the zigzag has worked. Zigzag theory has worked all playoffs. But I just think the Warriors know what they're doing, know what the Celtics are going to do to them, and there's not going to be any surprises. Because the only adjustment I can see the Celtics making is they can't start Robert Williams. When they're paired with Robert Williams and Al Horford, especially you see it tonight, there's just no pop. There's just no pop of anything. So we said, talking about the finals preview, the obvious adjustment is going small. Will the Celtics adjust to that in game 3? Or are they going to stick with the same lineup that won them game 1? And I think they're actually going to side with sticking with the same lineup that won them game 1 when they already need to adjust and to win game 3. So I could see them blowing game 3, the Warriors stealing game 3 in Boston, and then the Celtics make their adjustment for game 4 and even it up, like you said, to head back to the Warriors for the pivotal game 5. So I'm still riding with the Warriors. I liked what I saw from them tonight, and even though their offense kind of died, everyone's offense died in the second half. They had that massive third quarter and, had to just get to the finish line fourth. I like what they did defensively that I think is sustainable, that I don't think Celtics really are going to have an adjustment for game 3. I think the Warriors steal game 3, the Celtics win game 4, and we are heading back to Golden State tied 2-2.
Wow. Do you have a suggestion or thought on the line? What do you think it is?
I have not looked at it, so I do not know what it is. I would assume that it's probably about even. Maybe the Warriors are slight favorites, maybe by 1.5. That would be my guess. I certainly would not think that Boston is favored.
Boston by 3.
Boston by 3?
Yep.
That's insane to me. How does it switch? I mean, what was game 1 line? 3.5?
Yeah, I think it was. Stuck around three for the Warriors.
This one was a zigzag three, so the 4.5 made sense. But now it's going to switch 6 or 7 total points to where now the Celtics are favored at home. Yeah. Okay. No, I'm going to go ahead and give out early Warriors +3.5. That's easy money. I'm taking it. Before we get out of here, I do want to talk about something else. Not all finals related. We're still talking about the NBA. No, we're not talking about the draft. Sorry, everybody. That is coming up, though. Let's talk about Quinn Snyder, because news came out today, Woj broke it, that Quinn Snyder was going to step down as the head coach of the Utah Jazz. And then subsequent tweets, which obviously don't mean anything at all, that Donovan Mitchell was shook up, or whatever that quote was. Unsettled, I think, was the actual
unnerved
term used. Unnerved, or I thought it was unsettled, but I can't remember. Is this the start of the fire sale of the Utah Jazz, or do you think it's just a figurehead change? I mean, Danny Ainge is there now advising. Do you think they're going to run this back with essentially the same core, or do you think this is the beginning of something for the Utah Jazz and a major facelift change to at least their style of play?
It's got to be a blow up at this point. Like, I don't know what else you're going to do and what coach you're possibly going to bring in that's just going to be something that's a better option than Quinn Snyder. Like, I like Quinn Snyder as a coach. I really do. And I think that he could be the heir apparent to Greg Popovich down in San Antonio. So I think that the Jazz have to figure out something, because what they have on the books, how much you're paying Rudy Gobert, I think it's close to $40 million. If not, it's coming up. One of the years that he hits is $40 million. They already have issues within the team. That's not going to be cleared up by bringing in a new coach. I think this has to be a break it all the way down and start over. Now, I don't know how you get to that point, because I don't know who really would take on Rudy's contract, but if you can figure out a way to get off of his contract and go with maybe Donovan Mitchell, that's great. But I would say I would break down the entire thing and start over. I don't know if they do. I really don't, because I think they are good enough, and I think that they have the fan base that's coming back with false hope because they're having good regular seasons, that it gives them the thought of, hey, we're actually really good. Like, we have a chance again. And then you get smacked in the face and you realize we're a regular season team. So I don't know when the fan base turns on them, but I don't think the fan base would turn on them. So I don't think they actually blow it up, because I don't think they have the balls to do it, because I think they would be afraid to lose the fan base. So that's why I don't think they blow it up. They should.
The only reason I differ with you is because Danny Ainge, I don't think, cares. And he is not beholden to that fan base. He does not care. He will strip it to the studs if he feels like it's necessary. Obviously, blowing up, I mean, I think we can generally assume that Royce O'Neal will not be with the team. Mike Conley will probably be moved. Now, I don't know contract situations, so I'm not a GM guy. I'm not a money guy, but what kind of partner are you going to get with Rudy? I mean, it seems like the only contracts out there to even match that are like the Russell Westbrook territory, the John Wall territory, and are the Jazz going to do that, pair Westbrook and Donovan Mitchell together? But I think obviously everything is on the table except for Donovan Mitchell. I would be surprised if the Utah Jazz moved on from Donovan Mitchell. I could see everybody else gone, but they will try to do something. Even that's a setback for a year or two. Which then you're talking about, is Donovan going to be okay with that? Because obviously they're going to have to sell that to him. And he's already had, you know, his first 5 years or so that he's gone to the playoffs basically every year. And at least been in a round or been in the second round. So will he be okay with taking a step back for a year or two remains to be seen. But I don't think Danny Ainge is the guy who's going to care about what the fan base thinks. He cares about the longevity of the team. And I could see them selling absolutely everything off. But the problem is, like you said, who's going to take it all? Like, who's going to buy all of those older pieces like Royce O'Neal, Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Rudy especially? Who's going to take on those pieces for the Utah Jazz benefit? And they might have to ride it out, but hit me with those contracts.
Yeah, so Rudy, he gets paid $38 million next year, and then he has another 2 years, which is 41 and 43, and then he has a player option in year 25-26. $46 million is a player option, which is nuts. And funny thing is Donovan Mitchell matches, he mirrors him perfectly, but he makes $10 million less than him each year on an average, which is nuts. So looking at these contracts, you're not going to get much for Rudy, I wouldn't imagine, right? I don't know what you get for him. You obviously have to make up the difference, but if you get into where he's making 43 or even 41, that's tough to try to get up to that, because there's not many players that are out there that you would be able to get up to matching his contracts, right? So the only guy I think they would get a decent haul back would be Donovan, because, you know, $30 million, that's fairly easier to match because you can work out enough people to figure out how to get to that point. But then you have Mike Conley, who had a really bad year, probably just as bad as his first year there. His second year was much better, I think. But Bojan Bogdanovic, 19.5. Jordan Clarkson, these are all one-year guys. Jordan Clarkson, $13 million with a player option of $14 million. Royce O'Neal, 9, and then it just kind of falls off into, you know, $5 million a year. So that's tough. Do you think there's any way you can move off of Rudy, $38 million a year?
That's the thing. Like, who are the albatross contracts that people are going to want to get rid of? Like, are the Jazz exchanging Rudy Gobert for Russell Westbrook? Like, because that's the territory that you're talking about. Like, who's going to want him? Like, can you do a sign and trade with the Suns for DeAndre Ayton? I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. But DeAndre Ayton's not going to get paid anywhere near that. And if he does, it's just such a massive overpay to match a salary for a trade that why would the Suns want Rudy Gobert back? It does feel like they're stuck, but I mean, come on. Could you imagine Russell Westbrook in Utah after what went on with those fans there?
God.
Good God, that would be fantastic. Talk about him not playing or not being having a great time in L.A. Imagine him in Utah. But specifically, back to old coach. You believe that he's a good coach?
I do. I think he's good. He has his team that's fairly good every year. Now, I think there's issues around the players, and I think there's they have their flaws, but I think it's because of the players and their abilities. But having teams that are consistently good year after year, being in the good regular season team and in the playoffs, that's hard to take away from a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think it's just the sum of the parts. Like, he had good players, but when it came down to it, his adjustments were always weak, and he always got taken advantage of, and he always relied on the Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert pairing when it was continuously getting destroyed. And they were better in certain series with that small ball lineups, but he always went back to Rudy and Mike Conley. So I don't know. Like, I think he's well respected, and I think he's a good coach, but I don't think if I was a young NBA roster team, I would want Quinn Snyder. I think the team that wants him is a veteran squad. Would you agree with that? Like, somebody like, if for some reason the 76ers got rid of Doc Rivers, would you prefer someone like Quinn Snyder over someone like the Charlotte Hornets? You know, a young, small ball, run and gun, which kind of fits more of the style of what the Jazz play, just chunk up a bunch of threes. But maybe not a long-term development guy, even though he was there for 8 years or whatever with Utah. You think he's a better fit with a veteran playoff ready team or should go for a younger team?
No, I think he has to go playoff ready team. And there's going to be that. Look at the players that are aging in this league. Now, I think a good fit would have been maybe him in LA, but that's obviously not an option anymore. But he would be somebody that would be good, you know, like, you know, Brooklyn or Philadelphia, teams like that, that are, have aging superstars that are still really good, but they're just, they're vets and they need somebody, you know, one of the old heads to come in and just kind of be the CEO, right? That's what you need. Yeah. Somebody to run the business, and just kind of be very good coming in and out of timeouts and, you know, drawing up different plays. So, yeah, I don't think he's the guy that you want to bring down, you know, to somewhere like Houston to develop all these guys or Orlando per se. He's not that guy. And I think that I don't think he goes and coaches anywhere this year. I think it's going to be completely a year off. And that honestly, after being at a place for so long, knowing that you left on your own where you're, I guess you're, I don't know, you're, nothing got tarnished. Your career is not tarnished. You as a, your coaching skills aren't tarnished. You left out when you had years in your contract before things got kind of crazy in Utah, you left. And so now you can take a year off because you know that you'll get another 4-year contract. So he's pretty much trading out 2 years where he knows it's going to be miserable to be able to get another 4-year contract. It's going to be guaranteed wherever he signs, wherever he goes to coach next. He's 4 years. So he's at plus 2 years either way, and all he has to do is probably take this year off.
Yeah, I would be surprised because he seems like a worker, like he just likes to work and to be around it, that he's at least on a staff. But, yeah, it kind of would be surprising if he was a head coach right away because he does seem like he's just worn out, right? Just look at his physical appearance. He looks like he's dead half the time or about to turn you know, into Dracula. But real quick on another head coach before we get out of here. Darvin Ham was hired to be the head coach of the Lakers. I don't want to talk at length of this because, you know, this has been out for a couple weeks now and we just didn't get a chance to talk about it. But is this the right hire that makes sense for this Lakers roster right now?
No. I don't know enough about Darvin Ham, but being a first-year coach with LeBron, I don't know why. I've heard speculation that they are, if you're watching and looking at the Lakers roster, that you can see half the roster is young and the other half is old, and there's going to be a nice easy transition as soon as LeBron gets ready to move out. You have these young guys ready to come up and take over. Who are the young guys on this team? Like, is it Austin Reeves?
Over? Yeah, is Austin Reeves and Talen Horton-Tucker, who they've been trying to trade away for, you know, a first-team All-NBA player for 4 years, is going to take over for this Lakers roster? I mean, it's complete crap. But I'm with you. Like, Darvin Ham has been well-respected within the coaching community. Everyone's, oh, when's he going to get a shot? When's he going to get a shot? When's he going to get a shot? Well, he gets a shot in probably one of the worst situations that you can have in basketball for first-year head coach. I mean, you've got LeBron James, who's not going to listen to you, and Anthony Davis, who's a walking Band-Aid on crutches. So this is your first test in the NBA, and I think a lot of it was people were saying that he's a player's coach, he will hold people accountable. You're not going to hold a 38-year-old LeBron James accountable. Good luck with that. Okay?
Yeah.
So, for me, this choice by Darvin Ham is a bad one. Now, his entire success as being a head coach of the Lakers, because a lot of assistants like this, this is your one shot, right? Like, you, if you've been waiting in the wings a long time, you really only get one shot at this. And if it fails, you're likely never to be seen again. You'll always be on assistant coaching staffs, but it's very, very rare that you get another shot as a head coach. So this is his one shot, and his one shot, he chose to take over this team, this very old Lakers team that's kind of riding the coattails of LeBron James and Anthony Davis's health. So his entire success hinges upon the health of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And to me, that is not, and Russell Westbrook, if they don't move Russell Westbrook for something, which I don't know what they could possibly move Russell Westbrook for that would actually be beneficial to this team. But if it's any kind of package, it's a bunch of older players on bad contracts as well to equal Russell Westbrook's one albatross contract. So to me, if I were doing my first and probably only real chance at being an NBA head coach and sticking as an NBA head coach, this is probably the last situation that I would have wanted to have been involved in. Is that how you see this?
No. Like, I wouldn't want to be okay. in that position, but, like, you're being offered a head coaching position. Like,
right?
He got to this point because he thinks he's a really good coach. He gets a chance to go coach for the Los Angeles Lakers with a guaranteed contract. You have to have enough belief in yourself to think that you're good enough to get it done. There is no way, unless I was just awesome and been a coach before, maybe, let's just use Quinn Snyder for example, right? He knows he's going to get another coaching gig. At pretty much, he could pick it probably if he really wanted to because of maybe, I don't know, just kind of the way that his career has gone so far. But that's a guy who's already been there, done that. This is his first chance, and it comes with the Los Angeles Lakers. Yes, it's not ideal, but he's potentially coaching on a team that could go to the NBA Finals if they, for whatever reason, figure their stuff out. They're still the favorites. They are the favorites to win this next season. They're the betting favorites. Like, you have to say yes. You have
to. Absolutely insane.
It sucks, but you have to say yes.
I get it. Like, you're offered a massive pay raise that you're going to have. Like, you're always going to have a salary, right? Like, even if this does flame out and you fail, you're always going to have a job as assistant coach, and you're still going to make crazy amount of money for an assistant coach anyways. So to make this, like, to me, I get it. He's been waiting a long time. He wants a shot. But to me, this would not be my optimal choice. But I get taking the massive pay raise for the 4 years. I totally understand that, but this cannot be an exciting job that anyone wants for their first big gig, right? Like, I get it. He could get all the glory. He could get all the glory if, and it's basically hinged upon health, like I said. If they're healthy, they could have a good season, maybe. And if they have a good season and make the playoffs and somehow make the Western Conference Finals, I mean, he's going to look like a genius. But we know if you're in LA, how quickly you can fall from grace. Just ask Frank Vogel, because apparently his coaching was the reason the Lakers sucked last year. So to go from winning an NBA championship to 2 years later, you're the reason why everybody's injured and sucks, because you're having to play Austin Reeves, Talen Horton Tucker, DeAndre Jordan in a rotation with Russell Westbrook. That was on him, apparently. So this, I just don't love it. For a guy that's well-respected like Darvin Ham, sure, take the money. You can't turn it down. I get it. But this is your one shot. I think I probably would have maybe hung out for something else. But I totally get it.
Wow.
I totally understand. But I hope it works out for him, because we've just seen this too many times. We know how this works out. This is it for him. And if it succeeds, then sure, he might get something else. But if it does not go well, he'll always be an assistant for the rest of his career, which is fine. He'll make tons of money. You just won't be able to hear him as a quote-unquote long deserved guy to get a shot anymore. Anything else you want to plug before we head out of here? I was hoping this to be a shorter pod, but it turned into a long pod. So look at us creating content out of thin air on a Sunday.
Yeah, these this finals is snooze fest in the third quarter, it seems. Game two. Nothing really. We so we obviously have content coming out like crazy with Grizz 901. But if you're interested in any of the players that are in the draft, we're breaking them down slowly but surely. But we have episodes that are coming out every Monday and Wednesday all the way to the draft. We're also doing a Spotify Live the Tuesday before the draft. So make sure you check that out. But a lot of good stuff coming out. You hear a lot of Ryan, less of me, which, listen, that's it's doing big numbers, less of me these days.
Sacrificing for the team. Love it, Danny. Yeah, so draft coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, we got games 3 and 4 this week, so we will be back next week, hopefully talking about a 2-2 series heading into game 5. But you never know. This could be Warriors 3-1, could be Boston 3-1, and could all be academic at this point next Monday. So thank you guys for tuning in. We will see you guys next Monday.